cause we got the alternative energy. Right. Nuclear free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Show. I'm Michaela Stubbs and today on the program we'll be speaking with Michelle Fay, an independent researcher whose work focuses on investigating the links between the weapons industry and the Australian government. But today we'll be talking about the National Press Club and weapons industry sponsorship. We'll also catch up with the Australian Director of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, Jem Rommald, to bring us an update on their work to rid the world of nuclear weapons. On the 31st of August, Undue Influence released a report exposing that more than a quarter of the National Press Club sponsors are part of the global arms industry or working on its behalf. On the National Press Club's website, they claim that the National Press Club of Australia proudly partners with organisations that share our commitment to quality independent journalism. Tell us about what you have discovered and in this investigation and what that suggests about their claims.
Yes, what was interesting to me, I hadn't had cause to look at the press club before. So when I did, which was in the wake of the cancellation of Chris Hedges as a speaker, but that was sort of a trigger, but it's not, you know, the research I did and the article I've written would stand on its own regardless of whether what happened to Chris Hedges had happened or not, because I was really stunned to see that of the 81 sponsors that the Press Club has, 21 of them come from the arms industry or actively work on its behalf. And quite a large number, 10, are actual weapons-making or military services supplying multinationals. So you've got Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, BAE Systems, Thales, Leidos, Saab Technologies, the Swedish multinational weapons maker, Serco, and a couple of others, a few others that make up the 10. So I was actually shocked, and I work on this sector all the time. So I have to say, when I ran my eye through the list of sponsors, I was actually shocked to see that many. It's a significant number. To give your listeners some context, in Australia, although it's a very powerful industry, so I'm not saying it's not, but in terms economic terms, it's actually a relatively small industry, proportionally speaking. So to have a quarter of the sponsors at the National Press Club being from this industry, it's just outsized, massive number. They're not remotely near a quarter of the economy, obviously, but we're talking in the single-digit percentages, you know. So that's why I was so surprised.
Yeah, and do you think that these companies are getting around strict advertising rules by having their sponsorship appear in the broadcast of the National Press Club's presentations?
Look, that was one aspect that I did put in the article because I found it troubling. It's probably not the only benefit they get from it. Who knows what goes on inside the National Press Club. But one thing I did find troubling because I watch a lot of broadcasts, watch a lot of the addresses myself when they're defence related. And what happens with it is relevant sponsors to the speakers are placed in positions where their logos being on the table gets on ABC television. And that's an ad-free environment, as we all know, the public broadcaster. And so there's a degree of management of that, and indeed the Press Club itself says that part of the benefit of being a corporate sponsor is that you get brand positioning. And so I've got a couple of examples in the article, but there were more. And it's relatively common. I haven't gone through every single address that's ever been on, so, you know, but I've looked at a lot, and it's not uncommon at all for relevant sponsors to be on the ABC for defence-related speeches. So, yes, it's a troubling aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so returning to, I guess, you know, what you said it was inspired you to look deeper into this. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges was booked to speak at the National Press Club on the 20th of October. He included in his brief about what he planned to cover in his speech a link to an article, The Betrayal of Palestinian Journalists, in which he had written, Israel has murdered 245 journalists in Gaza by one count and more than 273 by another. No war I covered comes close to these numbers of dead. Since October 7, 2023, Israel has killed more journalists than the US Civil War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, including conflicts in Cambodia and Laos, the wars in Yugoslavia in the 1990s and 2000s, and the post-9/11 war in Afghanistan combined. His speech was then cancelled, and would you put this down to the undue influence of some of its corporate sponsors?
Well, look, I haven't found any direct links like that. So, and really, it would be startling to do so, because the way that influence works is just in a whole context. So we also have in Australia, as we've seen in the last couple of years, a lot of debate and division over what people have called the Israeli lobby and so forth. So, you know, that is also in play as well. And that's a big factor. So I would hesitate to say that it was directly a result of weapons companies having said or done anything particularly in relation to that. The thing that is disturbing about this is not to me that the arms companies would try and have influence in a place of influence. That's what they do, and, you know, they're corporations, they're seeking influence, and they're going to try and get it wherever. What surprised and shocked me was that so many have been able to become sponsors at the press club, and there doesn't appear to be any written, well, I asked for it and I wasn't given any, and in terms of the sponsors, no rules around who can or can't be a sponsor of the club and how it all gets worked out. There's no policy process in place for that, and nor is there, as far as I've been able to ascertain, and I've asked the questions and you saw the answers in the article. And so there's no documentation governing appropriate sponsors and the conflicts of interest that may arise in relation to what board members' own interests are in relation to sponsors. This was the more deeply concerning thing to me, that it came out of this current scenario as well.
What else have you uncovered in this that you think is really important to highlight?
I think one thing that, the thing that's the most shocking for Australia, given the context where we've had many hundreds of thousands, in fact, of, you know, it'd be more than a million people in total shown up in all different protests around the country in the last couple of years, against what is happening in Gaza, and which now the Commission of Inquiry is calling a genocide, to have these companies that are supplying the weaponry, and we're talking Lockheed Martin, the world's largest weapons manufacturer, the manufacturer, the lead manufacturer on the F-35 fighter jet, to have this company sponsoring the National Press Club, I just cannot get my head around that still. It's like the world's worst crime. The UN has asked these companies, named them, and asked them to stop supplying weapons. They've chosen not to do so. They've got blood on their hands, the blood of hundreds of thousands of people, and our National Press Club is accepting money from these companies that are profiteering from a genocide. I think it's an indictment on the National Press Club that it would choose to do that.
I know that you're still working on a research project looking at the revolving door between military companies and the government. Where are things at with that work, and or is there any other work that you're undertaking at the moment that you would like us to keep a lookout for?
Oh, well, the database is actually the major thing I'm working on. And in fact, that was exclusively what I'm working on for the rest of the year until the National Press Club thing came along, and that shows the level to which I was horrified and thought the public needed to know that I actually set the database aside in order to do that Press Club article. However, now I'll be going back to the database. And so what I'm documenting is the movement of people from the military, the Department of Defense, intelligence, and also political defense politicians and their staffers. So it's quite a wide array of people that might move out of public life and into working for arms companies. And also I've got several examples of people who've come from the arms industry side into government, and some people who've gone back and forth a few times. So this is called the revolving door, as you pointed out, and it's one of the main ways that the arms industry gains influence, quite a lot of influence inside government, not just in Australia, globally. It's a huge problem in America and also in the UK and other Western nations. So Australia is not alone. But we're certainly not an exception. We're also bad here. So that's what I'll be shining a light on when it comes out. There'll be a website that people can search, and also a lot of journalism and explanatory articles to show what the significance is so people can understand it.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much. That's so such vital information to have. I know we touch on instances of it, but having a really thorough report showing the level at which this is happening and the different ways that it manifests will be so useful.
Thank you. I'm glad you think so, because part of what I do, it feels sometimes like no one pays attention. But I think what's important in this field, just due to the opaque way the industry operates and so much is behind closed doors, that I really try to do the research and dig out the facts and put them on the public record for people to see and use in whatever way. So that's my contribution.
Yeah, brilliant. If people want to follow your work, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, I think the best way is to subscribe to my Substack, which is free. And it's called Undue Influence. And if you Google Undue Influence and my name, it will pop up and you can subscribe for free, and then you'll get all the articles as they come out. And then you'll be one of the first to hear about the database when it's launched early next year.
We were just speaking to Michelle Fay, independent researcher and writer, and I highly recommend that you check out her Substack, Undue Influence, and subscribe to that. It's full of so much important information. I think we can all agree that it's vitally important that the Press Club urgently tighten up and formalize its sponsorship criteria and its conflict of interest guidelines. And of course, remove immediately from its list of sponsors those companies that are breaking international law. The Radioactive Show is produced in the studios of 3CR and is broadcast across the continent thanks to the Community Radio Network. Next, we are joined by long-term nuclear-free campaigner and currently director of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons Australia, Jem Rommeld.
Thank you for having me on. And earlier in the year was the third meeting of state parties to the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons at the UN in New York. So that was a big gathering moment for the movement worldwide. And that was a really successful meeting. Australia was there represented formally by the mission in New York. It was in the caretaker period before the election, so unfortunately Parliament was there at the time. And we had a fantastic campaign team, including Karina Lester, the second-generation nuclear survivor in South Australia, who spoke at the conference directly. And Yeah, I mean, a lot has happened in the time since then. Then there was the federal election, and we've been working hard since then to bring on board the campaign all of the new parliamentarians, especially of the Labor parliamentarians that have won new seats, to get them to join the long list of supporters of the ban treaty, so that we can pressure the leadership of the Labor Party and of the government to stop their delaying and to get on with the jobs that have been long promised to sign and ratify the nuclear weapons ban treaty. And of course, there was a huge moment for the movement worldwide in August with the 80th anniversaries of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and just before that, the 80th anniversary of the first nuclear explosion ever at the Trinity site in New Mexico in July 1945. So a lot of really somber events and commemorations to draw attention to all of the people who lost their lives in that year and since from nuclear weapons, which is really an uncountable number, especially if you include everyone who has suffered and survived and become victims of nuclear testing worldwide. There have been over 2,000 nuclear tests worldwide with a really devastating, long-lasting, intergenerational impact. So that was really a time to remember those stories and remember all those people and to honour them and to promise them and really reaffirm our work to make sure that it doesn't happen again and that these, you know, horrific weapons that cannot be used to just limit a small number of people, they cannot be used in anything other than a catastrophic mass violence episode, that they're not used and that they're wiped off the face of the planet. So we've got a long way to go to get there, and the politics and the international rhetoric, nuclear armed states are upgrading their arsenals, making nuclear weapons threats consistently. So the work is difficult, but it's necessary, and we've got a lot of potential here in Australia.
Yeah, Trump's recent announcement that the United States would be testing nuclear weapons immediately, whatever he meant by that, and that came hot on the heels of the Russian President Putin's announcement that it had tested nuclear-capable, nuclear-powered cruise missiles and sea drones. We saw in the Four Corners report China demonstrating or their nuclear-capable weaponry, and, you know, we saw Trump claim incorrectly that we've got more nuclear weapons than anybody, we don't do testing. I see them testing and I say, well, if they're going to test, I guess we have to test. Yeah, obviously in response to what was coming out from Russia. Given that the United States still has extensive testing facilities in Nevada and they've never ratified the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, how serious is that threat?
Well, it's problematic and it's ridiculous all at the same time, because it's just an outright lie that the US has more nuclear weapons than anyone else. Trump should know that. He just lies and seems to sort of get away with it. And no country except North Korea has conducted an atmospheric, a full-scale nuclear test since the 1990s. But a lot of them have tested nuclear-capable missiles, platforms, including the United States just earlier this year. So they are testing already on an equal basis to Russia and to China. It's not new, really, what he's proposing at all. But the ambiguity of the language that he used and the way it was presented is really that saber-rattling nuclear brinkmanship that's very unhelpful, because it does raise the temperature. It raises tensions. And it makes people worried, as it is intended to do and as it should do. We should be seeing really a backlash against that. We should see countries around the world condemn such rhetoric, including Australia, which we didn't see happen at all. But it's problematic. And, yeah, I don't think it's actually a huge threat that the US is going to resume full-scale nuclear tests. It would take a few years for them to get to a state of readiness to be able to do that. And I would expect that there'd be global outrage if that was to happen, and it would most definitely be followed by other countries following suit. So let's hope that no more steps are taken in that direction and that it does de-escalate from here. But in the context of all the Trump administration and from this dangerous kind of nuclear brinkmanship behaviour that he likes to engage in from time to time. So, you know, our country is still really tacitly and logistically supporting the US nuclear program. And we saw in the Four Corners episode earlier this week the risks of nuclear-capable B-52s being based at Tyndall in the Northern Territory. That's planned for the near future, and currently the Australian government is not requiring transparency over whether those aeroplanes are carrying nuclear weapons or not. And we also saw that the US Virginia nuclear-powered submarines that will be visiting and rotating through Australia are now also being, retrofitted to be able to carry nuclear missiles as well. So we're talking about planes and submarines with nuclear weapons coming to Australia, potentially meaning that nuclear weapons could be launched from Australia. This is making Australia a high priority target for any adversaries, putting a big red target on our back. And it's also something that we should not be part of. We are a non-nuclear country. We have signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The population is very anti-nuclear, as we saw at the last election. We have a right to know if there are nuclear weapons coming into Australia, and we should have the right to say no to that. We want transparency about nuclear weapons on any platform coming into Australia, and we want that to be subject to public debate and something that we can affect. And one of the ways that we can do that is by making sure Australia signs up to the Nuclear Weapon Ban Treaty. It's really, until Australia does that, we're not doing anything good, anything really meaningful and effective in the nuclear weapons space.
Yeah, and Albanese was such a strong proponent of the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons whilst in opposition. What are the main sticking points for the Australian government that's preventing them from signing on now, particularly as they've been mandated to do this based on that platform that they agreed on at their national conference?
Yeah, and Anthony Albanese, I mean, he stood up there on the stage at the Labor conference. He's held ICANN's Nobel Peace Prize. He was a really active participant in the campaign before becoming Prime Minister. So, you know, what's happened? A few things. Of course, one of our main opponents in Parliament is the Defence Minister, Richard Miles. It's no secret that he's opposed to Australia signing on to this treaty, and we saw that in the Four Corners episode on Monday night. But he doesn't represent the whole government, the whole party, and we know that, you know, the government position hasn't actually changed after what he said. He gave the impression that they're not going to sign, but that's not the government's policy, actually, and that was reaffirmed on Tuesday morning by Assistant Minister Josh Wilson, who's a co-chair of the Parliamentary Friendship Treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. And he sort of affirms that the government's position is still to engage and examine the treaty. Of course, that's not where we want it to be. We want to now, instead of standing still, move forward and actually get that signature to happen. But the main barrier, as you asked, Michaela, is pressure from the United States. All of the nuclear armed states hate this treaty, and they do not want their allies and friends to sign onto it because it stigmatizes these weapons. And it takes away one of those pillars of support that they need to continue justifying having these kinds of lawful weapons. And that's the point. The point is to isolate the nuclear armed states, put them out in the cold and let them know that these weapons are beyond the pale now and that no modern defence force should have weapons of mass destruction in it. So the US doesn't want Australia to sign it, but that's not end game, because Australia sometimes does do things that the United States doesn't like. It's difficult to get that to happen, but it is possible. We've signed the treaties that prohibit landmines and cluster bombs, and the US hasn't. I'm sure the US didn't like that, but Australia went ahead and signed it, and then, you know, has forever since been a proud signatory of those treaties. And we've seen that other countries that have military alliances with the US have signed onto the ban treaty and of those military alliances have continued with the exclusion of nuclear weapons. So that's what we need to do. There are a few details that need to be worked out. We need to make sure that Pine Gap doesn't assist with the targeting of a nuclear weapon. We need to make sure that Australia is not supporting the potential use or threat of use of nuclear weapons through hosting nuclear weapons. Like, we know we can't have nuclear weapons based out of Tyndall. That's totally unacceptable. But there'd be a couple of years between signing and ratifying for the government to sort all that out and make sure that Australia is compliant with the treaty. So it's really important that we sign on to this. I think this government wants to have a good reputation on the area of nuclear weapons, and they've just got no leg to stand on until they sign on to this treaty. And in the context of AUKUS, I think they know that, because there's a lot of discontent in the Australian community, in the region, even within the Labor Party, against AUKUS. People want to see something good happen, and signing on to this treaty would be something good that wouldn't redeem the whole exercise, but it would be something to put some guardrails around it to make sure that at least there are no cooperation on nuclear weapons in the context of AUKUS. Of course, you know, the work continues to get AUKUS to be scrapped entirely, and that's really the best case scenario for Australia's security policy. But signing on to the ban treaty is definitely a critical part of that.
Currently, ICAN is focusing on encouraging everybody to go and meet your MP and ask them to support the nuclear weapons ban treaty. We've heard about how important it is at this time. So if you want to get involved with this action, they can support you to do that with all the information that you need. Connect with that campaign at their website, icanw.org.au. That brings us to the end of today's show. I will put extended versions of these interviews in the podcast, which you can find at 3cr.org.au/radioactive. I'll put links to everything that we talked about today in the show notes there. Thanks so much to the Nuclear Free Collective at Friends of the Earth Melbourne for the ongoing support for the Radioactive Show, and to the Community Radio Network that gets this program out to community radio stations across the continent every week. That's all for today's show. Thanks so much for listening, and join us again next week for more news and views on nuclear peace and energy issues.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.